On today's show, we'll be joined by weekly co-host Ben Dubose to discuss head coach Steven Silas, coaching for wins or coaching for development. We'll also talk Alperen Şengün, his role in the Rockets hierarchy, what his role is, what his role should be. We'll also talk about Jalen Green and his recent struggles, how LP might be the key to unlocking Jalen Green and helping him get out of his shooting slump. Plus, we'll also take a look at the Brooklyn Nets, the fact that they canned head coach Steve Nash and what that means for the Nets picks that the Rockets own. All of that and more coming up right here at Locked On Rockets.
This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
The Houston Rockets select Jalen Green and Jabari Smith Jr.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Every time I step on that floor, I'm coming.
You're getting somebody who's going to come in with a chip on their shoulder, somebody who's going to come in and compete from day one.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
What's up and welcome to another edition of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian, a credentialed media member. I'm also the host of Locked On NBA Mondays, host of the State of the Rockets podcast, as well as Rockets Watch. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin and the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets. Free and available wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube, where you can help the show out tremendously by commenting anything under the show. Remember, for the house, for the team, for the algorithm, go comment on the show. It helps out a ton. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has covered the season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, it's where the game starts. Joining us now is our weekly co-host, none other than, of course, the podfather himself, Rockets Wire editor, Ben Dubose. You can follow on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Although if you follow him right now on Twitter, you're going to get overwhelmed with a lot of baseball content, seeing as how we are in the midst of the Astros World Series, their quest to add another World Series title to bring the title back to Houston. We do wish them all the best. Go check out our friends over at Locked On Astros. Some great Astros coverage. But Ben, we're here to talk Rockets right now. I'm sorry to pry you away from the Astros for 30 to 45 minutes here.
We are recording pregame, at least, thankfully.
Yeah, no, I had to take that into consideration. But let's, you know, today I want to kind of tackle a handful of things. Steven Silas, some of the questions about, you know, arising out of this past game from the Rockets Clippers, where, you know, it might seem that Steven Silas at times is maybe coaching a bit more towards, you know, winning rather than coaching for the development of the team. We'll talk a little bit about Alperen Şengün and kind of where he ranks in this Rockets hierarchy, where he should rank, as well as some of the other pieces, some of the non-major pieces that have impressed us so far this season. As well as, if we have time, we'll talk about the Brooklyn Nets canning Steve Nash and what that may or may not mean for the Rockets Nets pick watch, if you will. But let's start with Silas, Ben, because some of the decision-making and some of the choices made at the end of the Rockets-Clippers game were a bit peculiar, and I think there's been a recurring theme that you've highlighted, that I've highlighted, that a lot of people, it really stood out, is the fact that Eric Gordon is kind of this, like, safety blanket for Steven Silas, and he routinely goes to him in these high-leverage, high-pressure situations, and I view this as maybe not actively detrimental, but this is stuff you want the young guys to have these opportunities to thrive in those moments. And by making EG your go-to guy, it kind of robs them of that opportunity.
Yeah, and I thought one of the more memorable moments of last season, and I do think it was a springboard of sorts, was that KPJ winning three in Washington, which sort of, in my opinion, served as a springboard to the rest of the season. And we know how he finished very strong. We know the shooting numbers progressively increased, and maybe some of that was getting over the quad injury he suffered early in the year. But I think there's confidence that can be gained from coming through when a team isn't sleepwalking. Let's be honest, for a lot of that game yesterday, the Clippers, they weren't just shorthanded without Kawhi Leonard and Robert Covington, also no John Wall. They were sleepwalking at times. Whereas in the fourth quarter, you could see the intensity dialed up. And when it's a game within a possession or two both ways in the final 2 minutes, if one of your young guys comes through, then to me, that's a really big thing, especially against a team that on paper should be a contender. Now, I know they have Kawhi Leonard, but still, It's a very respected franchise. They've got Paul George, a perennial all-star candidate out there. If the Rockets had won the game on the backs of one of their young guys, and I'm especially looking at Kevin Porter Jr., who to this point's probably been Houston's best player this season. We've seen him have some big shots in the past. We know they're trying to develop him as a point guard. So I would have loved to have given KPJ the keys and say, look, go out and make a shot, go out and create for someone else. And sink or swim, I think it's a learning experience. But to go with a 33-year-old Eric Gordon on both of the final two possessions, one a turnover, the other blocked by a guy in Batum who's basically half a foot taller than him. So it wasn't like that was totally unforeseeable by any stretch of the imagination. It's frustrating because, as you said, it does feel like that Stephen Silas is just trusting the 33-year-old veteran, soon to be 34, because that's just, as you put it, his security blanket. But at the same time, this is a season that's about development. That's really what the Rockets stress to us throughout the offseason. And I think there is a role for Eric Gordon. I absolutely buy the arguments that his leadership on the practice court, in the locker room, his value as basically a contributor that does not need the ball a ton to be effective with his floor spacing out to 27, 28 feet, his defense. I buy that he makes the game easier for his teammates. But again, a lot of the selling package for why a 33, 34-year-old Eric Gordon still makes sense for the Rockets is based on the idea that, hey, he can provide a lot of value and intangibles in so many ways without needing that many touches. Now it feels like you're trying to sort of shepherd these touches on top of it. And it's sort of like, well, wait a minute, hold on. Because at some point you do want your younger guys to get some of these high leverage reps, which that definitely would have been. And so, yeah, I get the frustration, especially when you don't win. That is the, you know, it's one thing if Stephen Silas goes that route and the Rockets win. I agree that there is a world in which even if KPJ or Jalen Green isn't the guy making the winning shot, that if you win these games, then okay, that puts everybody in a better state of mind. And it's sort of like what we're seeing with the Spurs, the Jazz, and the Thunder early in the season, teams that are supposed to be sort of in the Rockets tanking tier, if you will, of the Western Conference. Those teams, while I don't expect their early success to continue, look, the fact that they're competitive, I do buy that it helps the development of the young players that they're trying to move along based on the fact that, hey, the vibes are positive. If not immaculate, they're at least very good. As opposed to with the Rockets, not only are you not getting the development late in these close games, you're not even winning. That's what's so frustrating. It's like if you're going to go down this route, then at least win the damn game, at least make it work. When you don't get a development and you don't get the win, then it's just doubly frustrating. And again, it's not that you expect a team as young as the Rockets to pull off a win on night two of a back-to-back in Los Angeles, even without Kawhi Leonard. The Clippers were nearly double-digit favorites for a reason. But at the same time, for them to lose the way they did, it's very frustrating because you'd like to think that, hey, even if they lose, okay, these young guys are getting better. At this point, they didn't get the high leverage reps. Jalen Green, Jabari Smith Jr. have not shot well this season. They're both in a funk at the moment. And so it's just very frustrating because it feels like you're not really getting the wins and you're also not getting the development.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more there, Ben. It was one of those moments where you're just like, you could almost see it coming from a mile away. In fact, good friend of the program, your co-host over at the Loggerline, Paolo Alves, did see it coming from a mile away and got
ratioed for it.
Yeah, I got ratioed by the pizza man himself on Twitter. I posted that to the Locked on Rockets. I posted a screenshot of that to the Locked on Rockets YouTube page. It's been all over the Twitter sphere. If you haven't seen it yet, it was quite the ratio. Eric Gordon did not take kindly to a tweet from Paolo. And you
what's
know,
so effing funny?
Yeah, that was some good stuff. And hey, look, I mean, Paolo should have heeded Eric Gordon's advice, right? Don't put anything stupid on Twitter. Eric Gordon warned all of us in the Rockets schedule announcement video. But you bring up a really great point there, Ben. You know, Jalen Green's, you know, shooting struggles as of late. And I think that directly kind of ties into Alperen Şengün and how he can maybe make life easier for a lot of the guys on this roster. And I want to talk about Alperen Şengün's role, you know, during this Rockets rebuild, the role that he could have on the floor, does have on the floor, or should have on the floor. We're going to talk about that in a moment after a quick message from our friends over at BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for betting football and the start of a brand new basketball season. Find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth analysis on every single game that you can get your hands on. And as always, BetOnline has you covered with all the best odds. Right now, you can take a look at who the odds on favorites are to win the NBA title this season. The Milwaukee Bucks leading the pack at plus 575. Boston Celtics right behind them at plus 600. Golden State Warriors at plus 700. And rounding out the top five, you have the LA Clippers at plus 750. And the the Phoenix Suns at +1,000. So for all of those odds and more, be sure to head over to betonline.net to learn more about the trends and action available to you. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, we appreciate you for making Locked On Rockets your first listen each and every day. For your second listen, go check out Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter the most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with local experts and insights only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Ben, let's talk a little Alperen Şengün and simultaneously Jalen Green a little bit, because I do think these two guys kind of go hand in hand a little bit. The decision to not have Alpi on the floor in the closing moments against the Clippers was controversial, to say the least. Yeah. He was, in my eyes, the second best player on the floor for the Rockets in that game, KJ Martin being the first. And the moments where Alpi had the ball and was kind of right, that, you know, that hub, that fulcrum of the offense, looked really good. And to not have that on the floor in the final 90 seconds, 87 seconds, whatever it was, you know, you could have generated some higher quality, better shots down the stretch rather than what wound up being a, you know, a bad shot from KJ Martin on a pick and roll. And then the two shots by Eric Gordon, one of them a turnover, the miss at the end. So I wonder, it feels like there's just like a disconnect between how we perceive what Alperen Şengün can do on the basketball floor, what we think he can do, versus what the organization and what the coaching staff thinks he can do. And even to an extent, his teammates, right? Because there was a play in this game where Alperen Şengün had a mismatch on Paul George, and KPJ, like, he was trying to post it up, and KPJ waved him off and then elected to shoot a contested three over Ivica Zubac instead. Alpi got the board, subsequently posted up Paul George, and then made the right read and kicked it out to Kevin Porter Jr. anyways, the same guy that just waved him off 10 seconds prior. And it's moments like that where it's like, what? Where is this disconnect between, can Kevin Porter Jr. not see how this would be the right play offensively?
Right. And we should point out, by the way, that when Şengün was removed with under a minute and a half left, there was a report from someone that was, well, I want to say Staples Center. Now it's what? Crypto.com, the crypt, if
the
you
crypt.
Will. Yeah. Someone that was there mentioning that Şengün looks very displeased, let's say, when he was taken out. And that's another thing you can go into with the overall structure. Are guys buying in? I wouldn't say that guys are out. It's not like the locker room is in chaos, but there's a few things. You know, you can go back to the Jalen and Jabari incident as well that makes you wonder, hey, you know, how together is this group? And that's something that sort of fluctuates inherently based on wins and losses anyway. But it just goes back to, you know, if you're prioritizing wins and not getting the wins, and you're not putting development at the forefront, and then the culture isn't fully there either, then it's like, at least if you focus on development, that's something that's somewhat in your control, getting reps to guys like Alperen Şengün, Jalen Green, Jabari Smith Jr. to an extent, to maximize their development. At least that's something in your control, whereas it feels like they're trying to do these things for the wins and maybe thinking if the culture follows the wins, but then you don't get the wins, you're 1-7, and it is what it is. One small thing before we go into Şengün specifically, I noted this on Twitter last night. So you just wrapped up an 0-4 road trip. And the two games that were winnable late were the first one at Utah, and of course the last one where you led by five against the Clippers before losing. Both of those had some very odd substitution patterns late. The Rockets in the Utah game, it was a five-point game. They had a timeout with 3:45, did not reinsert Kevin Porter Jr. into the game, who was their big difference maker down the stretch of that game in the second half as they rallied back. Put him back in with about 2.5 minutes left. Last night, they made the switch at about a minute 30, taking Şengün out and putting KJ in. And I do sort of understand wanting to reward KJ because, you know, the closing lineup spots are tough because you're always going to have KPJ and Jalen out there, assuming health. You want to develop Jabari Smith Jr. as a rookie. So there's really only two other spots. Eric Gordon's typically going to be out there if he's playing, which he was, sat out the front end of back-to-back because he's your veteran. We can talk about, you know, using him in different ways as we did earlier, but he's certainly going to be on the floor. And then there's one other spot. And I think that Steven wanted to reward KJ, who had a team high 23 points. But at the same time, at that particular point in the game, I would argue that it makes more sense to have a guy who can sort of be, as you put it, the fulcrum of the offense, which is which is Alperin Şengün. And I think that's especially the case, again, late in the game. The other team's defense is fully dialed in. We know the type of length that the Clippers have. They don't play that way for all 48, but between Paul George, Marcus Morris, Zubac in the middle, they can be disruptive and long defensively when they're actually bought in. And so I think that puts playmaking at a premium. And I think that's especially the case with Jalen Green and the slump that he's in. I did the stats for Rockets Wire earlier, the four-game losing streak, the road trip. He's shooting basically mid-20s overall, low 20s on threes. Just ghastly numbers for the season as a whole now. He's shooting barely above 36%. I want to say 34.5 from three. It's not good. And I think that makes it even more important to prioritize Alperin Şengün as really a hub. We've seen him start the last couple of games ever since he's come back from the illness. And I think even when Bruno comes back in the next week or so, they hope, then I think you have to, at this point, stick with Alperin Şengün as a starter, try and get him up to 30 minutes a game instead of 25. Because to his credit, he is doing a better job this season of staying out of foul trouble. Because when you look at the limitations of Jalen Green and you look at the original thought process going into the season of why they started Bruno Fernando as, you know, that role threat in the starting lineup, the biggest reason, we know that wasn't how they went into training camp. They went into training camp. Alperin Şengün told us on media day that he knew he was going to be a starter. He was with the ones. The decision to start Bruno and make Şengün a sixth man, it evolved over the course of those couple weeks in training camp in the preseason, in large part because Jalen and KPJ, but especially Jalen, were so good. It's easy to forget with Jalen in his funk now, but he was electric in the preseason. The efficiency was there. The scoring was there. And yeah, you could make a case that, hey, if KPJ and Jalen are going to combine to average 45 to 50 points a game on good to very good efficiency, then maybe it does make sense to have Şengün and his gifts as a hub coming off the bench and playing with maybe one of those other guys instead of both, because there's just not enough basketballs to go around. Well, with Jalen struggling like he is right now, and you want him to rebuild his confidence, we know what he can do. We saw it late last season. Let him focus on the things that he can control. Shooting, off-ball movement, things that are maybe not entirely controllable, but much more than, say, creating. Because we saw last night when things get really sticky and when Şengün's out there, you don't have as much of an identity. There's not as much off-ball movement. Sometimes somebody's just got to put up shots. Jalen tries to do it. We know he's not getting calls on these drives either a lot of the time. And it's just the frustration builds. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Somebody's got to create. Jalen tries to do it with his quickness, but he's either not taking the right angles. He's not, he doesn't have the timing right, or he's just missing the shots. And it just feeds into this. Well, it's another bad shooting game. And kudos to Jalen. He kept shooting. He did have that big bucket late in the game that should have been the game winner, if not for Paul George going crazy at the very end. But I just think to sort of get Jalen out of this funk, it would help if you can just sort of simplify, have him play off the ball more, focus on catch and shoot, focus on cutting to the rim and running your offense through Şengün more. I think that would help you a lot with Jalen and maybe Jabari as well, getting Jabari cleaner looks instead of having to, you know, try and create, which is clearly not a strength for him in his rookie season at 19 years old. So I think if those two guys are the biggest pieces of your future and they're struggling, which I think we can all agree they are the biggest pieces of your future and you're obviously struggling, then Şengün can help unlock both of them. He can simplify it in the short term. Again, the only real argument against it was based on this idea that, hey, even though Shingun's going to play more minutes than Bruno and he's a better player than Bruno, then maybe you just don't need that in the starting lineup if you've got all this offense anyway. Well, it's pretty clear you don't have all this offense right now. So for the foreseeable future, obviously they have ever since coming back, you know, from the illness. But I would say even when Bruno comes back, unless you see a big surge from Jalen and Jabari, and specifically not just in, you know, making shots, but playmaking, then I think you need Şengün as a playmaker no matter what, just to sort of take the burden off them, let them simplify, and let them get some cleaner, easier looks.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw like one little glimpse of what that could be in this Clippers game, right? There was a Jalen Green backdoor cut, Alperin Şengün with a beautiful bounce pass feed to him for an easy 2 points at the rim. One of Jalen's only four buckets in that game, and you're just envisioning, right, if you could pair those guys together and actually run some sets for them, run some actions where then Jalen could get those easy buckets. I fully agree with you, Ben. Right, I was on the train of, like, bring Al P off the bench to start the season because it made sense, because there wasn't enough basketball to go around. If Jalen and KPJ were going to play out of their minds, makes sense. But it's also, I think when you look at that perimeter oriented style with guard play like that, Jalen and KPJ are capable of that, you know, even capable over multiple stretches of games doing that, but they do fall into funks, right? It's hard to sustain that level of perimeter play, whereas Alperen Şengün's play is inherently a little bit more sustainable because it's not based on, you know, this constant, okay, I'm going to break down my man on the perimeter and make these right reads and kick it out to shooters. It's just, he posts up, he reads what the defense does, and it results in either a bucket for him, free throws for him, or a double team that then he forces the, you know, not forces, but sends the pass out to an open shooter. So that level of offense is a lot more consistent and a lot more reliable over, you know, a longer span than I think just relying on your two dynamic guards to kind of carry the game every single night. So,
and one other point that I would make on that front, with all the struggles they've had at backup point guard, with Deshaun Nix not playing well, and the fact that it's pretty clear that Steven Silas doesn't really trust or want to trust Josh Christopher right now, then if you play Şengün with the starters, perhaps that makes it a little bit easier to stagger Kevin Porter Jr. and decrease the role of that backup point guard. Because right now, that's a problem. It's pretty clear that they're not wanting to entirely trust Josh. And Deshaun Nix, let's just be honest, he's not playing well. He doesn't look like a rotation player right now. So perhaps if you start Şengün and give him more high usage early in the game, then maybe it makes it a little bit easier to sort of stagger Kevin Porter Jr. and then make him sort of, you know, not your backup point guard, but sort of decrease the role of that backup point guard a little bit, because clearly that's an issue right now.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about it before, right? The idea of, okay, well, if you're bringing Al P off the bench, then he kind of helps, you know, alleviate some of the lack of playmaking in that second unit, but you can kind of achieve...
The reverse can work, too.
Yeah, you achieve the exact same thing. You put Al P in the starting lineup, let him make life easier for KPJ and Jalen, and then maybe you go back to some semblance of staggering Jalen and KPJ to where one of them is the guy, the primary ball handler in the second unit, and then either completely eliminate the backup guard role for Deshaun and or Josh Christopher, two guys who, again, Deshaun has not looked great, and Josh Christopher possibly in Steven Silas' doghouse. I mean, he's had, what, like 4 minutes collectively over the last, like, four games. You know, a couple DNP CDs, which is not a great look. So, you know, that's, you know, obviously not a lot of confidence being instilled there right now, unfortunately. But coming up, do want to talk about some of the other guys on this Rockets roster who have been the standouts elsewhere on this Rockets roster, or I should say the standout in our respective eyes. We're going to talk about that, as well as we have our first Brooklyn Nets pick watch alert in a while. So we'll talk about what the Steve Nash firing potentially means for the Rockets owned Brooklyn Nets picks. We're going to talk about that in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, Ben, we spend a lot of time very focused, and rightfully so, on Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green, even Jabari Smith Jr. to a lesser extent, Al P., right? Those are kind of the four, I don't want to give them all the cornerstone title, but right, they're the four big-time prospects for this Houston Rockets team. But there are a bunch of other talented individuals on this team, you know, that have actually had some, you know, pretty shining moments both throughout preseason, throughout this early season stretch. I'm curious to know who in your eyes has stood out the most from the group of other guys, right? And I can't exclusively call them bench guys, because situationally some of these guys have started, right? Garuba has started, KJ Martin has started, you know, guys like that. So who in your mind, if you had to pick one guy, has impressed you the most to start this season?
For me, it's clearly KJ Martin. And I know there's some recency bias with him scoring the 23 at Staples, but he's really taken the next step. He's defending well on the perimeter. The shot has come and gone, but we've seen enough, and it goes back to the preseason as well, that I think we can trust that the 36% from his first two seasons is, in fact, legitimate, despite some of the advanced shot tracking metrics that are out there that we love to make fun of from time to time. I think it's clear that KJ can at least shoot as a respectable level, and then you combine that with his athleticism, his ability to guard multiple positions, and there's a viable player there. And I think that's really big, because, you know, to throw another shout out to our friend Paolo, he made the case before the season that, you know, it's a really big year for this group of others, if you want to call them that, because going into next summer, there's a good chance with all this cap room that you're going to have to form judgments on some of these guys. There's still a long way to go. We're 8 games into an 82 game season, of course, but if you don't, and even if you do get lucky at the top of the food chain, you're still going to have more money than that. The odds are, you know, if you're coming off a bad season, you're not going to get a big fish. So you may end up getting more sort of medium-sized fishes. Well, those medium-sized fishes are going to crowd guys that are in the rotation this year out. And so you want to have some idea in that group of others, hey, I feel good about this guy as someone that I can trust a year from now in my rotation when I'm trying to win. And I think it's really big for KJ, who was a second round pick that they bought in 2020, to step up. Because when you look at the four picks from 2021, there's two of them, Josh Christopher and Usman Garuba, that at the moment, it's way too early to call them bust. And in fact, in the case of Usman, he's actually played very well in limited minutes the last couple of games. So I do think that as he gets more reps, if he stays healthy, hopefully we'll see that there's more there. But to this point, let's be honest, we're, you know, a year and almost 10 games into it. Neither Josh nor Usman is clearly at the point where you can say, hey, this guy is for sure going to be a rotation player a year from now when they're trying to win. No, the jury is still out. And while it's not the end of the world, if you swing and miss on a pick at 23 or 24 in the first round, those aren't spots where you say, wow, you've got to hit. At the same time, they're picks that you would like to hit at for sure. And in my opinion, if you don't, then it helps just in terms of team building, putting together, you know, because you only have so many shots to develop rotation quality assets, then it almost gives you a hedge if you're able to get a rotation quality player like KJ Martin from a very low second round asset. Then it gives you sort of a built-in buffer in case one of those other Josh or ends up busting. So to me, in the short term, KJ's playing well. I think it's, you know, a great storyline after he, you know, allegedly was uncertain of his role over the offseason. He seems to be running with this. He seems to be happy from everything that in the locker room, getting along great with his teammates. But I also think it's big for the Rockets, because if there are these questions with Usman and especially with Josh right now, then getting a rotation player from a lesser resource like KJ Martin appears to be can really help you from a team building perspective.
Yeah, I think you absolutely have to go KJ Martin, even though right there maybe is that little bit of recency bias, like you said, with his, you know, most recent fantastic performance against the Clippers. But even past that, he has been, you know, he looked just like, I don't want to say a completely different player in preseason, but just looked comfortable out there on the floor, comfortable attacking closeouts, comfortable putting the ball on the floor when he needs to. Yep. He's had some really impressive passes, right? Like he might be.
He can play the three. That was a big question. Like, he absolutely can play on the perimeter. And that was the big question. If he can play on the perimeter, then yeah, there's something there.
And that's the development, right? Is he's gone from being, you know, what was essentially like an undersized four with, you know, all this, you know, insane athleticism, leaping ability, questions about his shot, to, oh, wow, like he's routinely hitting threes at a respectable level to where defenses have to honor him. And he's able to attack off closeouts and play that three spot. And his defense has also gotten considerably better over time. That's been an area of his game that the coaching staff has consistently remarked on. It's just been like, you know, Lucas has highlighted it. Silas has highlighted it. The fact that KJ is a very switchable defender, can guard multiple positions on the floor and does it well, at least just as far as his man-to-man defense has improved over time, as far as that's concerned. And then obviously we know what he can do when he catches a defense sleeping and he comes over as the weak side shot blocker, and you get those highlight reel plays with KJ just soaring above the rim to swat somebody's shot out into the fourth row. So, which those have been few and far between this season. I don't know what's up with that. Like we need old Giant Slayer KJ back.
That's true, but he's also taken on more, I would say, of a direct primary defender that's responsibility fair. Than he did his first couple of years. He came over from the weak side a lot, and he was also sort of playing closer to the rim anyway, because you predominantly used him as a four and even at times as a small ball five. Now it's sort of like he's not having those because, he's defending guys at the point of attack on the perimeter more. And to his credit, he's hanging in there.
Absolutely. No, that's a great point too. It just, I do miss some of those high flying KJ blocks, but it's
for sure,
you know, for the greater good.
Boban? Remember you got Boban?
Oh, my goodness.
On teammate violence now.
That I know. Oh, my goodness. You know what? That'd be a great question to ask. You know what? I'm jotting that in my little notebook of questions to, you know, throwaway questions for like shoot around or practice one day where I'm just like, you know what? All right, who do we have? KJ Boban? All right, let's talk about the last time, you know, KJ blocked you. So with that, Ben, I do think that one of the other big storylines, you know, news that recently came out, the Brooklyn Nets have started the season in shambles, which is, you know, fantastic for the Houston Rockets, who still own their draft capital all the way through 2027. There's all sorts of stuff going on, right? Ben Simmons does not look like the Ben Simmons of old. Kevin Durant looks like he might be mentally checked out a little bit, going through the motions. Kyrie is being Kyrie. And the fall guy in all of this, and Steve Nash is not without his blame. He hasn't been a fantastic coach, but, you know, he's at least the first domino to fall, getting canned by the Nets. And there are reports that the Nets are bringing in, or, you know, want to bring in, Ime Udoka, who obviously had a ton of success in his rookie year with the Boston Celtics. This is a situation that, you know, you got to imagine that the Nets probably started kicking the tires on Udoka the moment he became available, you know, a month ago, whenever it was that he officially cut ties with the Celtics. They probably started doing their research then and trying to figure out if this was going to be an option. This isn't something that comes together in the span of a couple days after you can your head coach. I don't know if this is a necessarily a good thing for the future of those picks for the Rockets, kind of the uncertainty, right? You fire a head coach midseason, all the turbulence going on over there, or if bringing in Udoka, I mean, that's maybe a controversial hire, but also he got a lot out of that Celtics team, and that could be exactly the type of voice mentality that this Nets team needs to get on the right track, which could, again, really hurt those picks for the Rockets.
So I'm actually more optimistic on it than you, because I just think that by and large, it's really tough for these in-season changes to do a whole lot. The one exception that everyone will point to is the Ty Lue for David Blatt a few years ago with the Cavs. But what people forget is that Cavs team was 30-11 when they made that switch. They were literally on pace to win 60 games in a weak Eastern Conference. That team was already really good. It was just about getting a better personality fit and a guy that they could trust a bit more in the postseason for the inevitable matchup with the Warriors when everything was on the line, for a team that already knew it was a championship contender. By and large, your in-season switches where the new coach doesn't really get to implement his schemes, doesn't have the benefit of an off-season training camp. Many times it's like what the Rockets went through a few years back with J.B. Bickerstaff for Kevin McHale in a season that ended at 41-41. Not saying it was a mistake rid of McHale, but it's just you sort of have to temper the expectations. For me, I look at it as validation that yes, the situation is pretty crazy in Brooklyn. I think we should have known that already, of course, by Kevin Durant demanding a trade. But in case you thought that there was any sort of understanding, this pretty clearly shows that there's not, that Brooklyn management knows they're up against it. And let's be realistic, this was always going to happen at some point. They were never going to break up and go into a rebuild because they don't have their own picks. They were going to have to be held at gunpoint to do this. This is not a normal situation where you say, hey, it's a veteran-laden team. It's not working out, so we're going to pivot to a rebuild. No, they are not incentivized to do that because Houston owns or controls their drafts through 2027. So they are going to do everything possible to avoid that. And when you get to a situation like this where it's hard to make major trades because – I don't really know who wants Kyrie at this point, other than the Lakers, and they don't have a lot to give. Clearly, they don't want to give up Kevin Durant, and the other pieces don't have a ton of value, including Ben Simmons. Then if you can't really make major changes to your roster, you're capped out, then the only thing you can do is change the coach. And so to me, this is sort of a Hail Mary. They were never going to go down the road of, you know, eventually going back to the Kevin Durant trade request and sort of giving up without trying everything that they can internally to, you know, somehow fix this. And so to me, this just confirms that, hey, they are, in fact, as desperate as we think they are on the outside. It's a desperation move. And I, even though Udoka is a good coach, I don't know how realistic it is to expect an immediate upturn in performance because, again, history tells you the majority of these in-season changes are tough because you typically there's a reason why most of these go through in the offseason because the new coach has time to get to know his players and put in his schemes and his systems and isn't having to do it on the fly. So this is difficult, and it tells me that, hey, the Nets are, in fact, as desperate internally and without answers as those of us on the outside have suspected. And it was not realistic to expect them not to fire Steve Nash, because even if you don't like him as a coach, look, they were never going to give up on this era of the franchise without at least trying. And there was a report in the offseason about Durant wanting a coaching change. So this was going to happen at some point. And thankfully, they're desperate enough that they're going to have to try it now. And we'll see what happens. I know some have sort of pontificated on Twitter that maybe 2023 the Nets should consider bottoming out because it's a pick swap year, and with the Rockets being bad as well, the Nets would be, if they're bad, they'd be guaranteed a pretty good pick, either their own or the Rockets. And of course, Rockets fans want to believe in that because that would give you, you know, that would really give you better odds at
double
Victor
odds for Wimby.
Yeah, combine the Rockets and the Nets. Realistically, though, that wasn't going to happen because from Brooklyn's perspective, all of that, the only reason that it would be worth it to do that is if you then think you could get this high pick and then basically convince Kevin Durant to take a gap year. like what Damian Lillard basically did last year in Portland, and then come back in 2024 and say, hey, let's give it a legit run with this, you know, top shelf rookie, or perhaps use the rookie as trade bait, which we saw the Blazers look at over the offseason the last couple of years, one way or another, basically use that asset, be it to add an impact rookie or to trade it for somebody. And then in 2024, well, I think it's pretty clear by now, with Durant only a few months removed from a trade demand, he's not going to say, hey, I'm okay at 35 or however old he is now to just punt back another year and then give this yet another go in 2024. No, if you're going to make it work with him, and again, that's the priority because they don't want to rebuild, not having control of their drafts through 2027, you've got to do everything you can to salvage 2023. And so I'm sure there's some Rockets fans that were thinking, you know, after this slow start, hey, you know, let's double up our, you know, lottery odds, as you were saying, for Victor or Scoot in the top tier. And while, you know, you can still hope for that, I don't really know if that was ever realistic. The Nets were always going to do everything they can to maximize this year. And to me, them doing it this early in the season, to me, it's just a tell that internally they're every bit as desperate as we thought and hoped they were on the outside. And I just think it's going to be very, very difficult to get a material change on the fly.
Look, I hope that that desperation is as beneficial to the Rockets as you hope it is, because I definitely don't quite see it that way. I see it as potentially right that like almost worst case scenario of like they get the right voice in there. It, you know, they manage to coalesce, come together, and actually get this thing figured out, because that roster is still just chock full of talent.
Well, that's if Ben Simmons is Ben Simmons. I will say,
I know,
that,
yeah,
that if Ben is as bad as he's looked, and I know they tried to downplay it, but he did have back issues in that one game. Then if Ben Simmons is not Ben Simmons anymore, then that roster isn't as good as a lot of people wanted to hype it up to be. And, you know, I do agree with you about, I think sort of the crux of our disagreement on this, I see where you're coming from. I just think that it would likely take until 2024. When I say 2024, I mean the 2023 to 2024 season, a year from now, for that to really figure it out. Yeah, to really realize the benefits of Udoka versus Nash. And I just don't know that KD is going to wait that long. I think to salvage things with KD, and especially 2024, which is when the Rockets fully own the Brooklyn pick again, I think you really need to show something to KD this year. And I think that's going to be pretty hard. Not impossible, but you know, you either need Udoka to work a miracle on the fly or for Ben Simmons to be Ben Simmons again. Either of those are possible, but I just wouldn't go so far as to say that it's likely.
Possible, but not probable. That much I can, and I'll agree with you there. It's one of those where it's like, man, the possibility if Steve Nash just wrote things out and just it could continue to be dysfunctional throughout the season, that would have been the best possible outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, they were never going to do that. There's so much desperation. At some point, they were going to fire this bullet. This is when they fired it. We'll see what happens.
Absolutely. And of course, we'll have you covered for that here on Rockets Wire, everywhere that you get your Rockets content from both myself and from Ben. But Ben, you know the drill. Let everybody know where to track you down at.
Yep. Ben Dubose on Twitter, the Rockets Wire on Twitter, rocketswire.usatoday.com for all of your daily Houston Rockets coverage. Jackson, as always, thanks for having me. Go Astros.
That's going to do it for another edition of Locked on Rockets. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, Odyssey app, free and available wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked on Rockets. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. As always, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.